Excuse me. Hey, boys. Yeah, you. Got something to say? Share it with the whole class.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to The Back of the Class, a guide to education from the kids at the back of the class. Thanks for those people who have chosen to follow us so far. We can be found on iTunes by searching for The Back of the Class, and we can be reached via email at thebackoftheclass@yahoo.com. Also, we've started a brand new blog for the show at thebackoftheclass.blogspot.com. This is where we'll be linking to things we talk about on the show and generally making a nuisance of ourselves. Check it out and give us your thoughts. We'd love to hear your feedback on what we can change, what we can improve, and how we can expand the conversations that we're having.
And there still is the opportunity to be the second follower.
Yes, exactly. We're looking forward to that second follower. Not that we don't love our first follower.
Yeah, Conan's great.
Each week in our show, one of us brings an educational resource into the discussion. We spend about 20 minutes discussing it, trying to focus on specific solutions to the problems that education faces, and then we spitball. That's the part of the show where the two people who didn't bring the material get to really lay into the person who did. As always, I'm Patrick O'Shea, an assistant professor of instructional technology at Appalachian State University. Joining me, as always, is Simon Richmond, a technology associate at the Education Development Center, and Daniel Curry Corcoran, who is a fan, obviously, of the show Modern Family, as well as Arrested Development, which should tell you all you need to know about him and his twisted personality.
He loves good programming.
He's also a guy who really, and I mean really, needs to get a handle on his calendar.
I really,
yes, you really,
really do.
You really need to get a handle on that. So today's topic was one that I brought, and so I'll do a really quick introduction, and then we'll open up the discussion. This is discussing a podcast called Freakonomics, with a specific episode of the podcast called How is a Bad Radio Station Like Our Public School System? For those of you who don't know, the Freakonomics podcast grew out of the book of the same title. The authors of this book, as well as a follow-up called Super Freakonomics, are Stephen Levitt, Stephen with a V, he's an economist, and Stephen Dubner, Stephen with a PH, who's a journalist. The different media that fall under the Freakonomics kind of umbrella are all focused on, quote-unquote, exploring the hidden side of everything. This means that they tend to apply economic principles to scenarios where they're not traditionally applied, and they base their thinking on economic principles of incentives and something called rational utility maximization, which in economics terms is basically answering the question of how a rational consumer will spend money to maximize its utility.
That clears it right up. Thanks.
Did you just define a phrase by using the same terms in that phrase?
No. I added some extra terms in there.
Just to make it more confusing.
Hey, Wikipedia can only go so far, guys. I don't know what rational utility maximization is. I'm not an economist, but it sounds if you're interested, go and look it up for yourself. And yeah, I am talking to you, Simon.
Okay, thanks.
Now, the concept that's brought up in this particular episode of the podcast is concerning how a program called School of One, which is a pilot program in New York City, is like the Pandora radio service. And I'll kind of explain what both of those are. Pandora, if you're not familiar, is a radio service. It's an internet radio service where you start a radio station yourself by identifying an artist or a song or an album or something like that. And then based on that song, the service builds a radio station and will, provide you additional songs going forward, which you can then like or unlike, and it will based on some kind of an algorithm behind the scenes, it decides what songs should be coming up based on the preferences you've already made.
Is unlike a word?
Oh, yeah, it definitely is. Have you not seen all of the unlike buttons that people are asking for on Facebook?
I guess not.
Well, Some of us keep up on these
I just go with the traditional dislike or do not like. But
if Facebook is the standard for English, then we're all in trouble.
I mean, he's already quoted Wikipedia once, and let's not even start spitballing.
Hey, Wikipedia and Facebook, hey, that's great.
Technically, Pandora just has thumbs up, thumbs down buttons. There's no words on them.
Okay,
technically speaking.
But I'm just being academic.
Yes, just persnickety.
Which one's the unlike one?
Well, yeah, exactly. Which way is up?
Okay, anyway. More importantly is the program called School of One, which is a trying to build the same kind of principles as Pandora into education, so that you're individualizing instruction for students. So as students come into the program, they're given some sort of a test to determine what their current standing is. And then their instruction is built from that point, where the tasks that they're given, based on different modalities and those kinds of things, are individualized to their own needs, and their growth in that academic field comes from an initial starting point, and that they can grow kind of naturally. So at this point, I'd like to open it up to comments. I know that Daniel, I'm sure, is just itching to make some kind of smart comments. If that were possible for him, I don't know, but we'll see.
This is hurtful. Now you're just being hurtful.
Yeah, well, someone deserves it. Keep me, never mind. Never mind. Go ahead, Daniel. Go ahead.
I mean, I liked the podcast. I wouldn't go as far as to say it was a school, or I'm not sure what you, I mean, they did say it was an experiment. I would kind of classify it as an experiment. But, you know, I thought in general the idea was good.
Is there anything I missed about it, or that I didn't explain well
I think
enough?
The idea, one of the things you didn't, one of the things I think might, just to clarify it a little bit, was this idea of having different modalities that, you know, right now schools basically have one modality where they come in and they are presented a lesson from a teacher. So I actually went back and they interviewed somebody. I think one of the parts of the podcast they had, I think they might have interviewed a young graduate student, or she might actually be employed by School of One. But they talked about the different modalities where they said, you know, they have large live instruction, small live instruction, virtual instruction, independent practice, you know, small group collaborative learning. So I think the idea is that people learn in different ways, and that people are free to come through. And, you know, it was an after-school program, so it wasn't really replacing the traditional day as of yet, but that the kids could come in and pick a different modality that they then learn from best. One of the things I didn't really understand was how they actually tied that algorithm in. And I might have missed it early on, but I didn't understand because if somebody was in a live virtual, I mean, I think they had somebody who was maybe podcasting or web chatting with somebody, how they would actually document that exposure to the curriculum, like if you're on a virtual chat with a mentor or something. I didn't understand that. I could see how it is if you were like doing an internet experience or going through a module, but they talked to, I think his name was Chris Rush, you know, they kind of framed him as the technical guy, you know, doing all the technical aspects in the background. That's the one thing I didn't understand, was how they actually, you know, got the kid into a system where it started to build the algorithm of. That wasn't clearly explained. I didn't really understand that a lot.
Well, do you think we need to know the details of the back end? Like, I don't really care how the back end of Pandora works. It seems to work. And
well, I just didn't understand how to set it up. I mean, I understand for, you know, Pandora, I don't really need to. But if this was something I wanted to investigate, like giving kids multiple modalities, I mean, again, it was just a podcast. So
yeah, we can spitball Patrick for bringing in something that wasn't very.
Well, I haven't started that yet.
Technically deep.
Oh yeah.
It was an introductory kind of a podcast.
That's all. That's all I am, is introduction.
But I didn't have a problem with that. It was still an interesting idea, and I'm sure that those guys would love to tell you all about it. The Freakonomics guys, the School of One guys, the Freakonomics guys do a good job of introducing complicated things to the general public, and so they don't go into a lot of detail.
Yeah.
But that was fine.
So, what do you think? What do you think, Simon?
I thought it was a great use of technology. I mean, it's to simplify the idea.
Wait a minute!
Surprise me, man.
This is Simon. What have you done?
I'm serious.
Where is
he? Never, ever cease to surprise me.
A couple of episodes ago, I was dogging on tech, which is used to teach skills that can be taught in less expensive, easier ways. Skills. Yeah, and missing the important skills and teaching superficial skills. Whereas this is tech, which is reaching beyond what you can normally do with a regular teacher. I mean, it's just a tutorial service. I mean, that's all it is. They're giving extra tutoring to these kids, but they're using technology to do it in a variety of different ways. The kid chooses the way. But then the most important thing is, okay, they test the kids to death. That was a little bit negative. These kids are getting tests every day. But then they use the data that comes from those tests and they feed it back into the instruction. And that's the part that's missing in regular classrooms. You can test kids, but you're not going to change what you teach the next day based on their grades, because you can't. You can't change instruction kid by kid when you have a large class. And even if you could, I don't think most teachers would have the time to or the know-how to change their lesson plan so quickly.
Right. Well, this is the problem that most teachers have with individualization as an instructional practice. They don't have the time. Theoretically, it's great. You go and you want individual students to learn at their own whatever modality works for best for them. They want all of that, but they don't have the time to plan it. And they don't have the skills. They're not trained to do it. And so I guess the question for me is, how scalable is this kind of thing? You know, and I don't know if they obviously didn't answer that very well in this.
No.
In the introductory podcast.
Yes.
I also don't know how truly customized these instructional modules are. If Johnny, you know, takes a fractions test and reveals that he doesn't fully understand the concept, his lesson tomorrow, how different is it going to be from the fractions lesson that he failed to get today? Are they really going to switch it up and teach him in a new way? I doubt that there's that much diversity. I would suspect that their effectiveness, and he quotes 4 to 6 times the learning gains in a third of the instructional time. Those are mind-boggling improvements. But I would suspect it's more about time on task than it is about focus learning.
Yeah, but I mean, if a student did not do well in a fraction, they might encourage him to go to a different type of modality, to where, let's say, he was doing one of them large live instruction.
Yeah, and they had
maybe they would move him
tutoring
in,
and those kinds of
yeah,
things.
Yeah, they would move him around to see what best met his needs.
Yeah, but if the kid has got some fundamental misunderstanding about math, like I do. Yeah. Then you're going to need a teacher to figure out what's wrong with the kid's perceptions.
Well, that's when he would do a virtual mentor or something.
Right, right. So
My
if the kid
is that it was, you know, I mean, what we talked about last week, you know, the whole idea of building relationships, and you know, I've kind of been harping on that for the past few weeks, but here, I mean, that's
no,
one
no,
of the
it's
reasons.
Been more
Not
than
that,
a few weeks.
Yeah,
well, it's been more than that.
I mean.
Don't tell yourself.
One of the reasons I thought, Simon, you would like this piece is because it did seem focused on the important stuff, that it was really focused on getting kids to learn standards. You know, you're still learning fractions, you're still learning computation or, you know, arithmetic or whatever the core standard is that the curriculum wants to learn. They're just giving you different ways to learn that. For me, that whole system is just bankrupt, and that's not how we – that's not really the world we're preparing kids for.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
See, what I really liked about this idea, whether it's whether it shows up in the practice of the idea, I don't know. But this is, in essence, trying to make education more nimble. And yeah, what we haven't right now is we don't have that nimbleness. Is nimbleness a word, Danny? You want to?
I was thinking fleet-footedness.
Okay.
Nimbality.
Nimbality. Unnimble.
Unnimble.
No, I don't think we have that in our current structures. And I thought it was very refreshing to hear Arne Duncan, the Secretary of Education, saying that the Department of Education was part of the problem. And they're trying to move away from the bureaucracy and create that structure of, as an engine of innovation rather than just a staid and boring kind of bureaucracy that doesn't change very quickly. I think that if we really want to change education, we have to utilize the tools that we have available to us and get to – and utilize those tools in such a way that we're meeting the needs of individual students rather than groups of students, because we can now use tools. I think this is showing that there is a way to meet the needs of individual students, or at least try to meet the needs of individual students, because right now we're not. We don't even try to meet the needs of individual students in education, in most educational settings. We try to meet the mean students' needs. And well, we lose out really on about the high and the low end.
Well, I talked about that factory model. You know, we got this factory model of 25 kids in a room. But I will point out one of the things that they did mention is that you never get to know the students as an individual, the relationship piece. So I thought I'd throw that back out there just to keep that discussion flowing among our follower. But, I mean, I think that's a very good point. I mean, I think that, you know, we're trying to teach teachers new ways of being nimble in the classroom. And, you know, you can give a group lesson to a class, like, say, you know, the next piece of the curriculum or standard 1.4 or whatever that may be. And then what I really liked about it, and that's one of the things that we've really been working on with getting teachers to use data better, is that, you know, when you split kids up into groups, you know, that's one way to do it. You can, if somebody learns better by working on the computer, or somebody learns better by working on them, that's a perfect way to differentiate instruction and break kids up, and kind of so you can float around as the facilitator of learning and really help guide kids where they are and move them forward. So I like that. I thought it was an attempt to make education more nimble, and I thought they were on point with that.
There's way too much agreement going on here. It's too much
agreement. Well, there wasn't much to disagree. I mean, it's an introductory podcast. Wasn't quite at my level of podcasting.
Well,
but,
then
I mean,
how about we? Yeah, because our podcast is so in depth.
Well, let's just pick on Simon for a little bit. I mean,
yeah, that's fine. Go ahead.
No,
I thought you would come out. I really did think. I'm a little surprised at the technology.
Well, I've got
not that
I've,
you're either pro or against technology. It just.
We need to be smart. We need to be smart as we apply technology. And here, look, a tool, by definition, is anything that extends your natural ability.
Yeah.
So what you can do with a fist, you can do better with a hammer or a screwdriver. It's extending the power of your arm.
Yeah. Unless you just want to knock somebody out and not crush their jaw. I mean,
yeah. You know exactly what I'm talking about. So any tool that humanity has ever invented extends a natural power of ours. You know, binoculars make us see farther. But the greatest power of all
is... The building is an extension of our skin. It's a car commercial. Go ahead.
Okay, fine.
We've totally gone off the rails somehow. What's going on
no,
here?
No, I'm coming to a point here.
Okay, all right.
The greatest...
I look forward to seeing
ability,
that point.
The greatest power we have is our intellect, and not necessarily our rational thought, but I would say our insight, our creative insight, the ability to suss out or intuit a solution. I mean, that's why I don't believe all the science fiction fear about robots and computers taking over the Earth, because I think we're very far away from a computer being able to kind of guess at a solution or get a hunch about what a solution is.
Yeah,
so that creative insight is at the very heart of a teacher's job, figuring out what a kid doesn't understand and replaying the message or representing the material to allow that child to see it in a new way. Now, School of One isn't doing that, but they are getting close to putting a finger on where kids are misunderstanding things and then giving them new channels to learn the material.
Don't you mean
so that's
understanding
them? That's a great use of technology.
Okay.
What was the technology? I didn't really think this is a big focus on technology type podcast. I mean,
the technology is running behind the scenes it's crunching down their test scores, and it's
so it's not really the kids using technology. It's just a computer plugging out algorithms.
Yes.
That's a good use of technology.
That's the thing that you liked about this was the background, like database crunching stuff.
Yeah.
Ones and zeros.
And
ones
that's
as
happening.
As long as ones and zeros, we can use technology.
Look, that level of data analysis is what's made Google great. It's what's made the Red Sox great. It's changing.
There'll be in 20 years or 10 years, there'll be a different Google. I mean, the problem I had with it, and I think.
Is it time to start with the spitballing? Is that?
Oh, do we really need to on this one? I mean, this one is kind of, anybody who goes out and logs on is going to be like, oh, I can see why they didn't want to spitball this one.
No, I got spitballs. I'm holding
one of
back.
My things, and I don't want to. Well, are we going to spitball the bringer of the information or the?
I didn't think there were rules. Are there rules to this?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the part of the show where the two that didn't bring the information, spitball person who did bring the information.
Let me look at the subsection 2.A.
You wrote it.
Of the charter says about how the spitball shall be managed.
All right. Well, let me just say one final thing before we jump into the spitball, if I could. That one other thing I didn't like about the School of One was that, you know, let me see what I wrote down here. It says kids are exposures. Is that what kids are? They're exposures? I mean, they're an algorithm. They're a number. How is number 141 doing? And did they progress as far as the computer? Should they progress?
That doesn't bother me as much as it obviously bothers you. And the reason it doesn't bother me that much is because
I'm just a number myself.
I am in many senses, but it's not the entirety of the number of the student. There are people who are interacting with each student who can demonstrate, you know, a caring and a compassionate relationship with that student. If all the student was a number to a computer, then I would completely agree with you. But just because the student is a number to a computer in one sense, that's fine.
Yeah, but the whole School of One progression was based upon what the algorithm says. If you have this great relationship with this virtual mentor in Senegal that's been helping you get through fractions, and you're like, you know, he's really progressing. I think he's almost got it. You know, we can move him on. He doesn't need to repeat this again. But the computer's like, 141 does not know fractions. You know, it's just, I don't know.
That was Danny Bot?
That's Danny Bot. I wanted to introduce Danny Bot tonight.
Well, here's my problem with this article. We already have a personal algorithm. We don't need someone to make it for us, some computer science guy, some statistician.
This is going to get deep.
It's called Mom.
Oh.
We've all got parents who understand us.
We argued last week that we may not all have parents.
Okay, well, fine. But the point is, there is somebody in most kids' lives who already has insight into what that child needs. And if the teacher isn't able to give the time to a large class one-on-one, there's parents who do care. There's parents who want to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
And the old-fashioned model of doing your homework at the dining room table with mom and dad looking over your shoulder, that's what this is trying to emulate here. Individual feedback customized to your learning needs.
So how is that a problem?
We're replacing parents with the machine.
No, we are augmenting, supplementing.
Fine. It's having an effect on test scores. But
after-school program? I mean, they have a 50% graduation rate in New York City. I mean, you could pretty have kids kick a can on the way to school and get it up to 52. I mean, we don't know that it's improving test scores. I mean, now that's a good question, though. Is it improving test scores? Because kids may be moving through this algorithm and maybe be showing progression, but does that equate to performance on an SAT or performance on an SA, you know, on a state standard?
Yeah, all that remains to be seen. That all remains to be seen.
That's in podcast.
But what I'm saying here is that the learning that the kids are experiencing is still out of context. It's still abstract learning. It's removed even a step further away from reality because it's now you and a computer screen. we need kids learning how to be real people, to interact with each other, and to unlock their abilities, their potential. So I mean, we're using computers to teach them skills, but it's the application of those skills. And more importantly, it's that kid's identity, who they are, how they fit into their family, their society, what they're going to do with their lives, how they're going to contribute to
you need to go to world civilization. And listen to the podcast we did last week. You really do.
See,
but, there was some really insightful information that would add to the argument you're making.
But here's the thing. Again, I would completely agree with you if this were the sole means of education. But it's not. This is a way of doing it. It's not the way. And I don't think...
Listen to Junior, Dwight Junior. I love it. Dwight, if you're following us, it'd be nice if you logged on and said you were following us. But
I would question that, though, Patrick. I suspect that this is really the back-to-basics approach on steroids. I think that this is...
It did smell of back-to-basics on steroids.
This is school saying, we are going to raise test scores and we have a clever way to do it, without observing the fact that test scores have got nothing to do with true quality education. It's like the Chris Rock joke when dad says,
I take care of my kids.
Well, you're supposed to take care of your kids. What do you want, a cookie? Your kids are supposed to learn in schools. When schools, when I chose my charter school for my kids, I walked away from the school that boasted.
You know how yuppie that sounds. When I chose my charter school for my kids.
Okay, it came down to two. And the principal who was boasting about his test scores turned me off. Because
what did the other principal say that turned you on?
Okay. Community involvement.
Your kids will be algorithms and will be
parents in school, field trips out, learning in the natural environment, those kinds of things. Telling me that kids are going to get good test scores if they go to this school is like listening to a car salesman telling me that his car has four wheels. It's supposed to have four wheels. They're supposed to get good test scores. You're selling me the bare minimum model here, and that's not what I'm looking
for. That's good. Look, Simon's got a rant going here. Look.
I'm loving the rant.
I am.
I am too. Yep.
So this algorithm, I mean, it's doing a good job, but it's doing the basic job. And what we need to be looking at is raising our eyes above the horizon and trying to reconceptualize what a school is supposed to do. Because like we learned last week with emotionally stunted society, with raising diagnosis rates of ADHD and autism, what we need is an emotional context for schools. We don't need kids to master fractions. We need for them to know who they are, how they interact with others, connect emotionally to their teacher, and learn how to contribute to society.
You were making earlier that we all have parents. Isn't that the parent's responsibility?
That's what the parent is there for. The parent is the original algorithm. We need to get them back in the class.
Listen, that whole rant just went off the rails right there. All right.
Yeah, can I say a good thing about school once? I think I've spitballed enough, and I don't need to spitball your selection of this podcast at all because...
Because you can't, considering the materials you've brought?
Because there's no need. Okay. One of the things that I will applaud school for one is, man, at least they're doing something.
They're trying. Yeah.
At least they're going out there and trying to... one of the things I posted on the blog was, you know, it's not schools that are going to save the world. It's everybody who's actually going to get off of the couch and say, okay, this is my idea, and I'm going to go make it happen. I mean, bravo for that. I mean, say again?
We're screwed then, if that's the case.
Well, we may be screwed, but at least we'll all be tired and screwed.
Sorry, excuse me. I've got a horse. I've got a bit of a horse throat.
Yeah, but I mean, I chose not to spitball you, but I could. I mean, here we've been talking a lot about technology, a lot about relationships, and you bring this algorithm-based model. How dare you?
How dare I?
How dare you?
See, this right there, that whole spitball is just absolute crap. How dare I? How dare I bring this?
You want me to
simply join in lockstep into your little cultish behavior? Oh, all
when I get you there, I will
love.
Have you. Yes, that is my goal.
All we need to do is love. Danny Bot says so.
No, Danny Bot is about algorithms. He's not about love. You're confusing me and Danny Bot.
It's so easy.
I have another problem with this article.
Okay,
this podcast.
Go ahead.
I swear he spent more time talking about bad radio and trying to explain Pandora than he did actually talking about education.
But this, I get confused on the commercials. I mean, you go to commercial.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not about just education. He's trying to draw a connection between the two. Now, listen, my job here is not to defend this.
His metaphor was flogged to death.
Of course. Yeah. We all flog our metaphors.
I wanted to know more about the algorithm and less about how Pandora worked.
But they're not going to tell you anything about the algorithm. Who wants to sit here and talk about, well, we weight this variable more than that variable? And if this
I do, and our one listener does.
One follower. Lord. Oh, no, he's going to have a major rant on this one.
Yeah, we'll wait to see what he comes up with.
And I hope he does, because...
Hi, Mark.
Not even our wives listen to this.
All right, anyway. Actually, that's not true. One of our wives does, and it's not mine.
Not mine.
One of our wives does. Yeah. She actually has a very good, interesting bit for the show, so yeah. She's actually trying to get involved.
Yeah, we'll talk about that afterwards. Anyway, we are at 31 minutes, so at this point,
all time flies.
Yes, unless there's something absolutely pressing to add to this conversation, I will say, Simon, thank you very much for joining me again.
You're welcome.
And Daniel, also.
Thank you, Paul.
And we'll be sure to work on your calendar.
My calendar's coming along.
All right. Bye.
See you guys.
See you.